Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 16th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 40 or 45 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we draw a day closer to the conference championship games in the NFL playoffs. We'll talk about those with Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. In-depth, very detailed breakdowns of Packers, 49ers, and also Titans, Chiefs here for this weekend's NFL playoff action. And we'll also talk some college basketball as that now gets into the spotlight for Brad as he makes that transition over from college football to college hoops. We'll talk about a lot of the things that he looks to incorporate, and we'll also carry over one of the talking points from yesterday about blue blood teams and those teams that have reputations and who's real and who's not here for this college basketball season. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Tons of stuff going on over there, as always. Daily NHL from Parker Michaels, NFL power ratings and model projections from Danny Vorgs for this weekend's two games, as well as a handful of prop betting picks there from him. We'll have prop betting picks as we head on into the weekend, and obviously plenty for Super Bowl 54 once we know what that matchup's going to be as well. College basketball, NBA, I'm working on my Major League Baseball stuff. Season win totals already out at William Hill and Caesars because there's no offseason in any betting market these days. But a lot of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. I also wrote up a UFC 246 preview as UFC rolls back around here for this weekend. So go check that out over at the website as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, but he is a good one, a good buddy of mine. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
Man, it's going well. How you doing?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And let's go ahead and dive right in here with the NFL playoffs. We'll save the college football discussion for a week or two from now, kind of let that sort of simmer down a little bit for both of us. But in the NFL playoffs here, Green Bay and San Francisco, the top two seeds in the NFC, Tennessee and Kansas City, the number two and the number six seeds there in the AFC. So with that in mind, what do you think about these playoffs here overall so far? The results we've seen, what we've seen from a betting market standpoint, how are you kind of evaluating the playoffs to date so far?
Well, certainly there's been some surprises, to say the least. I mean, it hasn't been necessarily a great one for me, certainly compared to not only my regular season, but past NFL playoff seasons. You know, obviously not overwhelmingly surprised that San Francisco and Green Bay and the NFC, but, you know, I do think Green Bay is relatively overrated, and I'm not necessarily 100% sure what I got with San Francisco. I think the one team that I am extremely confident about is Kansas City. I think they're the best team left. But obviously Tennessee is one of the biggest surprises we've seen in the NFL playoffs and, you know, maybe going on a decade here until the last team made a run from the wild card to the Super Bowl, so or possibility of the Super Bowl. So it's been hit or miss, but a little bit more misses than hits for me personally.
You know, I think that these playoffs have been really difficult for a variety of different reasons. I mean, you look at the Baltimore game last week. Baltimore badly outgains Tennessee, moves into Tennessee territory several times over, four turnovers on downs. You had the three turnovers from Lamar Jackson, the fumble, and the two picks. You know, from a stat sheet perspective, Baltimore should have been the team there. But again, minus three in turnover margin, and also they had some trouble stopping Derrick Henry. You know, you look back to Buffalo and Houston in the wild card round. Houston can't do anything in the first half. Buffalo gets complacent in the second half. All of a sudden, Houston winds up winning that game. Last week, Green Bay, Seattle. Green Bay in full control of that game in the first half. They get conservative. Seattle makes a comeback. Seattle ends up covering the closing number. If you took 5.5 with Green Bay, you should probably be doing something else with your time and your money. But you know, Seattle does end up covering the closing number. Green Bay covers everything up until that point. These playoffs are tough because, you know, again, we have so many stats out there, so many analytics, all this stuff. And yet we get these bad coaching decisions. We get these minus three turnover margin games that completely skew everything. It feels to me like college football and the NFL are more difficult than ever before, just because the margin for error is so small. It keeps coming down to turnover margin and coaches, and you really can't handicap both of those.
Well, you can try, but I mean, obviously there's a lot of randomness to certainly turnovers. Coaching, I don't know, there's fundamentals. I mean, we've seen a lot of these younger guys, these guys in their 30s come in and, you know, you're taught for, you know, the experience should matter at some point, but there's kind of been a fundamental change where the guys that are really grasping the analytics side, well, we've seen them have some success. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I just look at the variance just in games in between themselves. I mean, obviously the Kansas City Houston game from last week, but even a game, you know, Green Bay looks like they're absolutely dominating Seattle. But I think if you ask anybody, if Seattle gets the ball back, Seattle probably has a good shot of winning that game last week against Green Bay. So to me, even the frustrating thing is we're not even getting, you know, it's not more of the same. And when you're live betting and you're expecting maybe to see more of the same, we're not even getting that in a lot of these games. Not a lot of consistency.
Well, and I think too, and this is just kind of an overarching point, both for college football and the NFL. Like I mentioned, I mean, all the analytics are out there. There's just so much information, so many resources, so many places to go in and read up on the games or get your stat breakdowns or whatever else. And this is something you talk about all the time, the concept of paralysis by overanalysis. And
yeah.
I think it's one of those things where we try to handicap literally everything out of a game. We try to do everything we can to take away as much variance as humanly possible. And I envy the modeling crowd, man. I really, truly do, because they can take the emotion out of it. They can take the gray area out of it. They can say, you know what? My model says this. I'm playing this. If it doesn't work, then I tweak the model. You know, then it's not something you have to tweak emotionally or personally or philosophically, something like that. I just think that maybe it's the 24/7 news cycle actually getting to me. Maybe it's the fact that the betting news cycle now, for the first time ever, is really 24/7. But I just feel like we're pulled in so many different directions week after week with each individual game. And I don't know what the answer is, because you want all of that information in front of you. You don't want to leave something out purposely in your handicap for it to come back and bite you in the ass. I don't know what the happy medium is anymore, man. I don't know.
Yeah, but yet, you know, that's the thing. I don't think those modeling guys make for good guest appearances on radio shows, or, you know, they try to write up a handicap and, you know, people need a little bit something more to the effect than my number says this and the market says this, therefore it's a bet. That doesn't necessarily make for, you know, great radio shows, in my opinion. But, I mean, that's the thing we all have to struggle with at this point. I mean, you need to, I do think, you know, even though sometimes they say over analysis causes paralysis, I do agree with you. You have to have as much information in front of you as possible. But I wonder, you know, the market's obviously tougher and tougher, but, you know, sometimes, you know, we're trying to, you know, you and I talked about this before the segment. Sometimes I think we start to reach a little bit because we're on, you know, getting a little bit more media coverage, and we're trying to fit some narratives in there because, or fit to our handicap because we got to talk about a specific game. I think that's causes more issues than anything else.
Well, and I think too, when you look at the depth of these two games here in the conference championship weekend, both of these are rematches. You know, the game for San Francisco and Green Bay was quite interesting. San Francisco, I mean, they kicked their ass from tip to tail in that game.
Yep.
37-8. They were a 3-point favorite in that one, coming off of three really lackluster performances in a row. The two games against Arizona and the game that they lost at home against Seattle. So perception was down a little bit on San Francisco. People were looking for a reason to be against them. Then they trucked Green Bay in that game. And now you've got a situation where this line is clearly adjusted up from the minus three it was in the regular season, now to 7.5. Like I talked about early in the week here, San Francisco and Minnesota last week opened 6.5, got bet to 7. This open 7 gets bet to 7.5, even though Green Bay beat Minnesota twice in the regular season, went 13-3, looked really good in the first half last week. It's one of those things where, again, with two games on the board, you can talk every angle to death here, but I think what really matters, what we're really being told here, is Minnesota's better than Green Bay, with the opening line yeah. that we saw, and the movement that we've seen. Is it that simple this weekend that San Francisco, even at 7.5, is the play?
I'm leaning certainly that way. I think the market's certainly telling you Green Bay is overrated, and I definitely agree with that. I mean, when you look at a Green Bay team that's 9-1 in games decided by 8 points or less, that screams overrated. Even though they went 13-3, they only outscored their opponents by a combined 63 points this year. That's the lowest for a 13-win team in the history of the NFL as far as the Super Bowl era. That's overrated. They were outgained on the season. Overrated. I thought after the first, 20, 25 minutes, they were outplayed by Seattle, another overrated team last week. So, yeah, I certainly agree with the thought process that Green Bay's overrated. What does worry me are two things. San Francisco, at least it's more of a question mark, is one thing, and then there's a worry on the other. The question mark for San Francisco is, what defense are we getting? All right, if we're getting last week's defense and the first seven games of the season defense, then I feel pretty comfortable about laying the 7.5 here. But there was that 9-game stretch where they struggled. They gave up 26 points per game, which wouldn't even rank in the top 20 of the NFL. But they did get a couple of those key guys back, D Ford, Quan Alexander, and they're starting strong safety. So I got to think the truth of that defense is more as what we saw last week, but it's still a question mark. And then let me just ask you this, though. If it's a relatively tight game, even if it's still a one-score game in the fourth quarter, are you trusting Jimmy G over Aaron Rodgers? I'm not. I mean, that's why it makes it, even though I'm leaning San Francisco, I'm certainly not going to have a huge bet on the 49ers because of that concern.
Well, and furthermore, when you factor that concern into the equation, and I did mention that, some public bettors are going to say, look, I know San Francisco's defense is good, but it's Aaron Rodgers getting 7.5 against Jimmy Garoppolo. Yep. And some people are just going to go out there and play that angle, just because of that. But what adds some fuel to that fire here, I think, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, and a lot of people have been talking about this, Green Bay is really good with those first 15 or 20 scripted plays. So if Green Bay is able to get out in front, or at the very least, move the ball, score some points, flip the field, stuff like that early on in this game, how much can you possibly like San Francisco minus 7.5 if this thing is close at halftime? And then you do get that Aaron Rodgers versus Jimmy G angle in the second half. On the flip side, too, if Green Bay actually does come out, let's say they score the first 10 points of this game, something like that, does it change what Kyle Shanahan wants to do? Because at their core, the 49ers are a run-first team.
Yeah.
If they put it in Jimmy G's hands because they're trailing, or maybe the running game's not working, something like that, then how comfortable are you with minus 7.5? So it's hard because, again, you've got pros and cons in both columns for these two teams. And while I think the market is correct, I think the market is right to bump this to 7.5. I think the market was right to open 7 on this game and then go up from there, unlike last week where it had to be bet up to 7. It's not like you feel supremely confident about a San Francisco side here either.
Yeah, and let me ask you this. I mean, if you're looking to bet Green Bay, don't you put a little bit on the money line? Because of I think San Francisco's tight if it's a relatively close game. I think if it's a tight game, I like my chances of Green Bay to forget covering. I think they win the game outright. And yeah, as far as a live game, in-game wagering philosophy, I agree with you. If Green Bay's scoring first, I don't want a lot of, I'm not actually feeling pretty confident that, now I can get, San Francisco at a cheaper number. Now I'm going to, I didn't want to lay the 7.5 pre-flop, but and now that I can, only lay 3 or 4 with the 49ers after Green Bay scores first, I'm not willing to do that. So to me, it'd be more of the same betting Green Bay in that regard. What's your thought process there?
Yeah, I think that's tough. And I agree with you. If you like Green Bay, I mean, maybe this is like a 90-10 split, something like that, to put a little bit of a piece on the money line there. And I agree, even from a live betting standpoint, if Green Bay is up 7-0, 10-0, something like that, I think you do have to kind of wonder about San Francisco. And also, too, I mean, that San Francisco defense that you mentioned, very good the first half of the season, very good last week, not so good in the middle. Injuries playing a big role, as I talked about a lot, the early bye week playing a big role. But if they're down 10-0 all of a sudden, how many more points can they allow to cover 7.5 from a, you know, pre-flop standpoint? That's a big question here, too. You know, if you need San Francisco to get to 27 or 30 to cover this number, do you want to trust them to do that? I don't know if you want to do that here in an environment like the playoffs where generally things kind of tighten up a little bit. So there is that factor into the equation here, too. And one last point about, you know, mentioning maybe throwing a little bit of a money line sprinkle on Green Bay here. I know it was a tough college football season for you. It was a tough college football season for me. It seems like a higher variance environment. It seems like the talent pool kind of spread out a little bit more than it has been in the past. Maybe that's an adjustment we do need to make of sprinkling, you know, 10 to 15% of that bet on the money line if you like a dog, just to, you know, maybe enhance your bottom line a little bit. Because, again, I mean, we talk about college football. Really, we talk about the NFL, too. There are a handful of elite teams. There are a handful of awful teams. And I feel like everybody in the middle is capable of beating everybody else. So maybe that's a betting adjustment from a bankroll standpoint that, you know, a lot of us need to consider for next year.
Yeah, I'm going to run some numbers on that. I mean, and see if there's been a change, you know, how would it, you know, impact you? I don't want to overreact to one season. That's not going to be the case. But if there is a trend line there in the last 3, 4, 5 years that could impact it, or at least help your bankroll, I'm certainly all for that. That's it, when you say, I feel for you because you're a baseball guy. That's why I'm not a baseball guy, because I can, you know, think about some of those stuff moving forward with the football season. That's why I give you a hell of a lot of credit, bud.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Again, I mean, like I said, win total's already out. I'm writing the intros for my team previews, even though a lot of transactions still left to happen. It's just, it's the nature of the beast these days, and you damn well better be organized so that you can, you know, get a head start and a good jump on this type of stuff. But before we get away from the NFC Championship game here, what about the total for this one, Brad? We've talked a lot about the side, a lot about our thoughts with that. 45 and 45.5, the numbers out there in the market right now, does look like a little bit of money here kind of creeping in on the over. What are your thoughts on that?
A good total, in my opinion, in the market. Don't have a bet. I mean, again, I'll go back to it. You got to ask yourself this. What's the truth of the 49ers defense? If they are what they looked like last week, I think you got to lean under, because, I mean, there was such a stark, you know, when you're comparing the two San Francisco 49ers defense, the first seven games of the season last week, that's the number one scoring defense in the NFL. The last nine games of the season, you could say that obviously they were injured, missing a couple starters. They were tired because of the early bye week. That one ranked number 24th in the NFL as far as scoring. So what's the truth? Probably a little bit, maybe somewhere in the middle. But I certainly think that if you think, you know, San Francisco's defense overrated, you're betting the over. But if you like what you saw and you firmly believe with what you saw last week, then I think you lean a little bit under here. Specifically, the fact that I don't think it was necessarily fluky what San Francisco did to Green Bay in the first matchup. I mean, that was as dominant as it gets from a statistical aspect. And keep in mind, that was during the stretch where San Francisco was struggling on defense. If you look at the last half of the season and you know, circle their best defensive performance by far, easily it was against Green Bay.
Well, what's interesting to me about this total kind of ticking up a little bit, it's too early in the process for a lot of public money to have a lot of sway. I think that'll happen on game day on Sunday.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit of sharp money kind of leaking in, at the very least, a little bit of respected money kind of leaking in on the over. With San Francisco already going up to 7.5, the implication there is that San Francisco's offense should be able to have success in this game, because you would think a higher scoring game probably benefits a team like Green Bay with a guy like Aaron Rodgers. So
yeah,
yet another layer, another interesting little wrinkle here to see that total kind of going up a little bit with this thought that, you know, you've got the more polished, more proven quarterback in Aaron Rodgers that should help the dog, but the line going up from a spread standpoint. And again, I mean, look, maybe because there are two games, we overread into what's going on here, but I think that we have to. Otherwise, you just end up doing a disservice on a game like this.
Yeah, and I mean, people want to. I mean, they have the opportunity. I mean, your betting options are a little bit more, you know, widely available. I mean, there's a need and a craving to have a little bit more deep dives into this, because even though I don't necessarily think people should have some of their biggest bets of the year on this, let's be frank. I mean, how many people, you know, here's what will happen is, you know, during a normal NFL regular season, when there's, you know, anywhere between what, 12 and 16 games. So let's just call it 14 games. People, I'm guessing, are betting 3-4 NFL plays a week. But even though there's two games and there's, you know, 1/6, 1/7 as many games as what there is in the regular season, people are going to have almost just as many bets. They'll bet both sides. They'll bet both totals. You know, they'll probably make with some of their first prop plays, maybe bets of the year in this one. They certainly will in the Super Bowl. People are craving to want a little bit of action, even though necessarily in theory, that these should be some of the sharpest lines we've seen all year.
All right, so let's transition over to the AFC game here. This one, second by rotation order, first in terms of the chronological schedule on Sunday, 3 o'clock Eastern time kickoff, Tennessee and Kansas City, and total up to 53 here, which I don't think will surprise anybody, but the side now, there are some sevens popping up out there. Any 7.5 left in the market is pretty juiced on the Tennessee side, except for at Bovada and MyBookie, where they're dealing 7.5 even juice on both sides. So it looks like maybe a little bit of a sharp versus public split here, with some Tennessee sharp money kind of coming in a little bit, public sort of aligning some with the Chiefs for this one. What do you think about this line coming back down to 7, which is what it appears is happening?
Yeah, I'll be with the squares here. I'll lay it with Kansas City. I think it's a tough spot for Tennessee. I mean, you can go back to the middle of the 1990 season, and there's only been 5 times where teams played 4 straight road games. And in that 4th straight road game, they're 0-5 straight up, 1-4 against the spread. So tough spot there. And I just think Kansas City's the best team in football. Now this line says they aren't, because last week, you know, Tennessee was catching what that line even got up to 10 on game day against Baltimore. So, I mean, I'll say this, Adam, if you told me Baltimore -3 against Kansas City on a neutral, I would have a big bet on Kansas City. I know you got to upgrade Tennessee a little bit. I mean, you got to upgrade them a lot. I mean, when you're a 10-point dog and dominate, at least on the scoreboard, the best team in the NFL, I think you got to upgrade Tennessee 1.5 or so. But I'm not upgrading them 2-3 points, because we mentioned it earlier in the show. Statistically speaking, they were the first team in the history of the NFL playoffs to get outgamed by 230 yards and win a game. That's the biggest, I should say, the worst yardage differential for any team in a win in the history of the playoffs. I mean, there were more like +5 or +6 turnovers if you count in the stop fourth down conversions on Baltimore. I think Tennessee's a little overrated. I question the effectiveness of Derrick Henry. I mean, it's sooner or later, there has to be a fatigue factor when nobody in the history of the NFL has had 180 rushing yards in 3 straight games. And I just, Kansas City to me, when I watch them, they just look differently than anybody else, especially obviously on the offensive side of the ball. I like Kansas City quite a bit here. I disagree with the market move here. I'll be square. My favorite bet is to lay the 7 with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I like Kansas City here too, for a lot of the reasons that you outlined. And, you know, again, we talk about perception and how it impacts the betting market here. Again, the perception is Tennessee won 28-12. The perception is Tennessee held Baltimore to 12 points. They shut Lamar Jackson down. Lamar Jackson accounted for over 500 yards in that game. I mean, is that really shutting a guy down? I don't think so. Yeah, Jackson had the 3 turnovers, and then they turned it over on downs 4 times. So, yeah, essentially Tennessee was +7 in turnover margin in that game. So that has to factor into what's going on here for this one. And, excuse me, I get it. You know, Tennessee, second half of the year, became a modeling darling because they were playing so well offensively. Everything changed with Ryan Tannehill at the helm. Derrick Henry having like the best stretch in NFL history over what, his last 8 or 9 games. It's been absolutely unbelievable to watch. But Kansas City here, they scored 51 points in a game where everything went wrong in the first quarter. They couldn't catch a cold. They couldn't catch syphilis in a whorehouse. They couldn't do anything offensively. They had special teams miscues. Yeah, maybe Houston's not that good. Yeah, maybe Tennessee's defense is a lot better than Houston's. I mean, Houston was dead last in the NFL in yards per play allowed. But, I mean, you've got to respect Kansas City for what they did essentially over three quarters in that game. But keep in mind, they only gave up 10 points after the first quarter themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, looking at it, you know, a couple of those touchdowns defensively were obviously not their fault. I mean, you had a blocked punt return for a touchdown, and then basically, you know, a fumbled punt touchdown to set them inside, set up Houston inside Kansas City's 10-yard line. So, I mean, you can't put those scores on the Kansas City defense, and that's what you got to ask yourself. I mean, this Chiefs defense down the stretch, at least in the last seven games, only allowing 14 points per game. I get it that the one game before the stretch was a Tennessee win, but I'll even argue that game was misleading because with about 90 seconds left in the game, Kansas City's win probability was 95%, and somehow they lost that game to Tennessee, and that was the first game back for Mahomes from injury. He's certainly healthier now than what he was then, so I don't get it. I just don't. Let me ask you this. I mean, I know Tennessee's playing well, but this line is also saying that Tennessee on a neutral is 2.5-3 points better than Houston. I don't think that's the case. I know Tennessee in week 17 beat Houston, but Houston had nothing to play for. Just a few weeks prior to that, Houston went into Tennessee with basically the division on the line and beat Tennessee. I don't understand the line move. I don't think Tennessee – I certainly think they're a little bit better than Houston, but not, you know, 2.5-3 points better.
No, I don't think so either. And again, I mean, that game for Kansas City, I remember that game very vividly because I had Kansas City in the Super Contest thinking this defense has gotten a lot better. Now they get Mahomes back. You know, everything should be in great shape for them. What happened in that game is that the defense kind of slacked off a little bit because they got Mahomes back. But also that being said, I mean, Kansas City badly outgained Tennessee in that game too. So that was another one of those sort of misleading types of final scores there. And maybe Tennessee, maybe it's kind of been their MO a little bit here of late. You know, you think back to the Indianapolis game that they won 31-17. That's a tie game. What, midway through the fourth quarter, they get 14 late points.
Yep.
The Oakland game was close. You know, so, I mean, Tennessee, they're a great story. I have nothing against the Titans, nothing against Tannehill, Henry, any of those guys. But I think last week has overinflated their perception a little bit here. I mean, keep in mind, with Mahomes just coming back off the shelf, you flip home field in that game on November 10th, Kansas City's minus 11 or so. Now they're going to be down to minus 7 in this game. I do think that there's an overreaction here in the marketplace. And again, it's square, but I mean, I like Kansas City here.
Yeah, you flip home field, they're minus 11 in that game against Tennessee. And I get it. Tennessee's, you've upgraded them since then. But again, I'll say this, since that Tennessee game, I mean, how could you upgrade Tennessee more than Kansas City when the Chiefs, since that Tennessee game, 7-0 straight up, they win by 17 points per game, 7-0 against the spread, they cover by 10 points per game. So that line that week was saying Kansas City at home would have been 11. And to me, I don't think you can justify upgrading Tennessee more than Kansas City. So, I mean, you got my best bet for the weekend. I'm going to lay the 7. I'll be square. I'm not afraid of it. I think the Chiefs blow them out, to be perfectly frank.
Just to cycle back to the NFC Championship game real quick, seeing 46s now popping on the total here. So this one's getting hit pretty hard here on Thursday morning as we're recording. But speaking of totals, this Tennessee-Kansas City one up from 51 to 53 out there in the marketplace now. Seems like we're starting to get a little bit of buyback now. People kind of thinking this total may have peaked a little bit there at 53. What are your thoughts on the total here?
Yeah, lean under. I know it doesn't matter. I just said, you know, Kansas City's going to blow them out. And usually when you're laying 7 points with a favorite, you tend to lean more towards the over. But it just seems a little rich to me. I mean, looks like a little bit of an overreaction. I mean, to me, you know, Tennessee's so much better defensively than Houston. And yet last week's total was 51 with Kansas City and Houston. And there was, what, probably 4 touchdowns scored basically off of special teams miscues or turnovers in short fields last week. A little bit of overreaction to me. I certainly lean under 53.
Well, one thing that I'm sure we will see a lot of here, assuming that this Kansas City game goes back up to 7.5, or there are still some 7.5s out there, every public bettor, probably a lot of sharp bettors too, going to wind up with a lot of -1.5 teasers on both of these two teams.
You think? I'll make this case. I think it'll be the biggest teaser liability in the history of the NFL.
I'd agree with that. I would most definitely agree with that take.
You're down to the two, you know, championship games. It's the same day, and you got two favorites in that 7.5 range. I mean, kudos for the books. I think they killed a lot of people on the teasers the last couple of weeks, but you know, all this stuff usually evens out. But I got to think they're gonna have some big time liability on those two teasers.
Yeah, I got to think so, too. So before we transition away from the NFL here and talk a little bit of college basketball, let's go ahead and kind of do some projections here. Or maybe you've already seen them out there in the marketplace. I haven't had a chance to look yet. Have you seen any look-ahead Super Bowl lines?
You know what? I haven't so much. I'm trying to not look at them and then have it affect my, I don't like always looking at the look-aheads. I like to use the look-aheads. After the fact, after the games, to see what the overreaction is. I don't like looking at it, and it, you know, kind of impacts what my line on the game is. So I'm just going to give you what I think right now. I think Kansas City, certainly the most common matchup is going to be Kansas City, San Francisco. I mean, I think the Chiefs in that instance are 2.5, probably Super Bowl, Kansas City -2.5. I certainly think Kansas City, man, if they're playing Green Bay on a neutral, maybe it's Green Bay be really upgraded after going into San Francisco. I still think Kansas City is going to be laying in that 5.5-6 point range against the Packers. And then if it's Packers, Tennessee, ooh, that's a tough one. Cause I mean, you certainly would, if Tennessee does what they do and goes into Kansas City, and I think Green Bay is overrated. That's the one that I'll struggle with. I think the public will want to bet certainly Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, and maybe Green Bay comes like 1 or 2, but I'd probably put that line closer to pick.
No, I think that all makes sense. I'm actually kind of looking here at one of the offshores that has look ahead lines. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but just kind of looking at those, sort of getting a frame of reference as you're
talking.
Well,
that's fine. There. You can tell me now after I just said what I thought they were going to be.
Well, did you mention 49ers and Titans?
Oh, 49ers and Titans. Yeah, I would. San Francisco, let's call 4.5.
All right. So as I'm looking here, these come from Five Dimes. I'm sure other places in the market may have them. But Green Bay -2.5 over Tennessee.
So I'll take Tennessee.
You're definitely on par there. Total 45 for that one, by the way. Kansas City -4 against Green Bay, total 53.5. I, like you, think that's a little bit cheap. I think you get some Kansas City money there to kind of push it through that 4 and 6 corridor. San Francisco -3.5 against Tennessee, total 45.5 for that one. And then Kansas City -3 even money against San Francisco, 52.5 the total for that one as far as the look ahead lines go.
All right. Yeah, I think Green Bay, it would be my preferred choice there.
Yeah, no, I agree. If it came out 4, that'd be too low, I think. I think that would definitely be too low. And Kansas City-San Francisco, I think it's going to be really, really interesting, in particular because, again, we talked about perception and recency bias and narrative kind of shaping this. If Kansas City beats Tennessee but Derrick Henry runs all over them,
good point.
What are people going to think about San Francisco's ability to run on Kansas City? So I sort of wonder what that would do to both that number, both the side and the total there. 3 may be a little bit rich depending on how Tennessee looks. Now, if Kansas City shuts down Tennessee's rushing attack, then maybe 3 -110, -115, something like that would be where that number would kind of come out.
I just think from a prop market setting, Kansas City and San Francisco would be a hell of a lot of fun. So
that,
I mean,
because
it's not like, you know, San Francisco's got a lot of bell cows at running back. So I think it'd be, from a prop market, would be fun. That's what I mean, not because I'm betting both teams and I'll have a teaser like everybody else in the world, in the free world, will have, but I just think Kansas City, San Francisco would be a really good Super Bowl. I'd be happy for that one.
All right. Well, let's transition here over to the college basketball side for a few minutes, kind of talk about that market some, because you are obviously focused on college football all the way through the bowl games and on into the national championship game as well. So unlike a lot of other people out there, in this sports gambling space, your transition to college basketball is a little bit later. So you've got a lot more data points, a lot more information, and also you don't really have any biases coming in. You're just kind of able to look at what's happened and then sort of apply that to your handicapping. So what does that process look like for you here, making that transition from the gridiron to the hardwood?
Excellent question. And you're right, I'm a little late to the game. And, on one hand, you lose a lot of value because, let's face it, certainly more value betting college basketball in November and December than there is even at this time of year in January, and certainly more value in November and December than what it is in late February and March when the whole world starts betting college basketball. It's like most things in this industry, sometimes more art than science. What you give away in November and December, you mentioned it, if you have obviously a half a season worth of data points here. I don't have any perceived biases, and maybe that sometimes hurts me in college football, the fact that I study it so much and I shouldn't have any biases whatsoever. But and when you study the teams all off season, that can hurt me. It's not the case in college basketball. I'm not studying college basketball teams in the off season. I'm just going to be perfectly frank. Why? Well, it's during football season. I'm not going to, sacrifice anything during football in, September and October leading up to college basketball season, because that's when football's going on. So, I don't have any biases. I come in cold. I have what I have as far as, the non-conference, the games to digest from. So we've talked about this many times. I love finding the disparities and strength of schedule. I love, because a lot of the, we're going to talk about this here in a bit, but I love, because the market's coming in cold too. I would say the way I come into the market a lot of times when the general public comes in the market, and I know how the general public's going to be thinking coming in cold. They're going to be looking to bet teams that they know and they feel comfortable with, the Kentuckys, the Dukes, the North Carolinas, the UCLAs of the world. So if I'm in that frame of mind from the public and I know how they're going to attack things and how they're going to bet, obviously me being contrarian, I'm going to fade those thought processes.
So let's expand on that a little bit here, because we kind of had a little bit of that discussion yesterday with Greg Peterson when we talked about the Stanford-UCLA game, where Stanford, the team has been playing much better than UCLA. UCLA transitioning to Mick Cronin's style of play coming over from Cincinnati. And that was one where Stanford opened a road favorite, closed a road dog. That number got as high as UCLA -2, -2.5. And Stanford wins that game by 15 on the road. Maybe part of that being that UCLA, more of a household name, a brand name program, whereas when you see a program like Stanford having success in the Pac-12, you kind of expect the other shoe to drop a little bit. So I know you and I were talking before we started recording here, and I guess we'll go ahead and start with this team, that you've got a bold call to make, or maybe a bold statement to make, about the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah, and I know it doesn't sound all that great when they're coming off their second loss this season, but hey, maybe that's the time to buy. Maybe I should be happy that they lost that game to Clemson, a Clemson team that's hot with, a pair of wins over North Carolina and Duke the last couple of games. But I certainly prior to it, and I still feel strongly about this, I think Duke's team this year, even though there is no Zion Williamson, no RJ Barrett, no Cam Reddish for them, I think this year's Duke team is better than last year's. It's certainly, without question, deeper. In fact, going through it, almost the last 20 years, this is the deepest Duke team we've seen. 10-guy rotation, 10 guys averaging 14 or more minutes. We've never seen that from Duke. This is a team that's been notorious for 7-8-man rotations. I think they're better suited to make a deep run, not only in the ACC championship tournament, but also in the NCAA championship. You just look at them statistically, they're the only team in KenPom that has a top 10 adjusted offense and adjusted defense. And in fact, they have a top 5 offense and defense. So from that aspect, you got to like that. And really, They got a couple losses. The Stephen F. Austin game is a game I think people would say, well, man, they lost that game to Stephen F. Austin. But going back through it, it was such an outlier, not just from the result, but you dive in that statistically. I think that, to me, looking at the team, I don't see a lot of weaknesses other than maybe free throw shooting for them is a concern. I just think Duke this year is not going to be as public as certainly as what they were last year when all the talk was about Zion. But I think this year's team, when it's all said and done, more likely to make a deeper run than the Elite Eight. I think Duke's Final Four caliber, depending on obviously their draw, but I think this year's team's better. Certainly I do.
Well, and as we look around here at some of the top 10s, top 20s that are out there, you've got teams like Baylor that are higher than they usually are. West Virginia been very, very good. The Dayton Flyers have been absolutely ridiculous this year. They're a top five, top 10 caliber team. You've got your usuals, a Michigan State up there, Louisville up there, Oregon, they're a top 20 caliber team. You've also got some teams up there like a Butler, San Diego State, maybe Florida State's finally living up to their expectations and all the athleticism that, Leonard Hamilton's had there in Tallahassee. But for a lot of people that are kind of transitioning now over into college basketball, they're going to want to bet the teams that they know, the teams that they think that they can trust, the teams that are there year in and year out. And they're probably going to auto fade teams like a Rutgers or, a BYU that's a top 20 team for Bart Torvik, a top 30 team for KenPom, Arkansas, a team that we're not used to seeing up there. It can be very dangerous here for people that kind of have that mindset at this time of the year.
Specifically this year, if this is the year you're looking to come in and bet the blue bloods of the sport, I mean, certainly Kansas and Duke are up there, Michigan State. But when it comes to just about anybody else, I don't necessarily think this is the year to do it because there's been more parity as far as results at the top than just about any year ever. I mean, you could look at it in the middle of December. We had already four AP number ones lose. That had never happened before January 1st in the history of the AP poll for college basketball. It goes back to 1948. So if you're looking to bet the blue bloods, this isn't necessarily your year to do it. I would argue there's more parity. There's a significant lack of elite teams, four or five elite teams, than what I've seen in any time I've been handicapping it.
Yeah, I mean, we've only got one undefeated team left out there, too, and that's San Diego State at 18-0. We'll see if they're able to keep going here. They've also played a very weak schedule, certainly one of the weakest of those teams that are in the top 25.
I think they can keep it going. I think there's probably a 15-20% chance that they could run the table. I mean, they've answered probably three or four of their toughest tests, so don't be a bit surprised San Diego State, at the very least, is sitting here. Because I don't think they're going to lose any of their next four or five games. But I think this is a team that could be sitting, 24-25-0.
Yeah, as I look here, Bart Torvik's got look-ahead lines based on all of his ratings for all the remaining games here for these teams. And the lowest favorite role for San Diego State is -7.7 on the road at Nevada on February 29th. So that's the lowest favorite role. It's a bad year for the Mountain West, too, by the way. But speaking of the Mountain West, obviously, that's a conference that's out there in your area, and you're not going to study up all 353 teams. You're too far behind the curve for that. So I know that we've talked about this before, but conference specialization, a big hallmark of your college hoops handicapping.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you an example of why that's important. So, reading the newspapers out here, what I caught, and this was a few weeks ago, what I caught specifically to the Mountain West is, and this is why specialization matters, and does it always work out? No. I mean, that's why they call it winning instead of gambling. But the Mountain West is using a different basketball, at least all of the Nike teams in the conference. There's six Nike teams. It's Air Force, Boise State, Fresno State, San Diego State, UNLV, and Utah State. Using a different kind of basketball, the Nike teams. And there's a chip inserted into it. And early on in the season, these teams that were using this basketball, they didn't like the feel of it. And you looked at their shooting performances specifically, outside shooting three-point was significantly worse when they were using this ball in specific games. So I know I just went down a rabbit hole there that was very specific, But that's the type of stuff that you can find if you you know, you specialize in a couple of conferences, stuff like that, that can help you win.
Well, and the thing that's interesting for you, you know, a lot of people do conference specialization with really small leagues, trying to find a lot of the little edges that are out there in the Big Sky or, you know, the WAC or something like that. But you tend to look at a lot of the major conferences, don't you?
I do. Is it ideal from a winning aspect? I mean, I'm pretty forthright and honest. Probably not. But let's face it, I do a nationally syndicated radio show each and every afternoon and evening on Fox. If I'm talking Mountain West basketball, the American East, you know, the Sun Belt, the Southland, the Patriot, the Colonial, I'm not necessarily sure the suits at Fox are going to appreciate that. So from a media aspect, I mean, you got to talk the bigger conferences, the Big Tens, the SECs, the ACCs of the world. So that's something, you know, you got to ask yourself, and all I think handicappers now got to ask themselves as this industry becomes more and more popular and there's more and more of a demand on the media side, is you got to ask yourself this: what's more important to you? You know, everyone's going to handicap, but is it more important to be on the media side? Or I shouldn't say that you got to choose one, not the other. What you do have to choose is what's more important to me. And that's the decision I'm going to have to make here this offseason.
So one last item of business here on the college hoops side, then we'll finish up here. You've got a game that you like tonight, and I thought it would be a good exercise here for our listeners to sort of get into the mind of Brad Powers with how he comes to a conclusion on a game and then winds up putting it out there for VIP clients. So what is that game, and sort of what was your thought process throughout?
So I like Gonzaga tonight, specifically in the first half. And hear me out on why I just like them regularly in the game tonight. Their opponent, Santa Clara, I think is one of the most overrated teams in the entire country. You look at Santa Clara, it looks good from a wins and losses aspect. Santa Clara's 15-3 straight up. But you look at who they played as far as strength of schedule, one of the weakest strength of schedules in the entire country for Santa Clara. And this is a team that's only played four teams in the top 150, not 50, top 150. So basically, they played four above average teams so far this season, Santa Clara has. And how have they done? Well, in the most recent game, which everyone is going to look at, they beat St. Mary's. So that was their best performance of the season. And the other three games, 18-point loss to Stanford, 31-point loss to Nevada, 19-point loss to San Francisco. It's been a very fortunate team. One of the things I use KenPom a lot, and Bartorvik. I can't talk. Why am I on the media? Looking at a lot of these advanced analytics, you know, one thing that I like using from KenPom is the luck rating. And Santa Clara is one of the most fortunate teams. They're top 10 in the country as far as a luck rating goes. And then what I do is, you know, I dive into the actual, you know, matchups. And I look at a Santa Clara team that really struggles on the offensive glass. They're not even in the top 300 as far as offensive rebounding goes. Gonzaga's top 20 in defensive rebounding. I look at three-point shooting because that's where we've gone to in college basketball. Gonzaga's elite as far as shooting the three-point shot, even with it being moved back this year. Santa Clara is terrible defending it. And then after I look at, obviously, power ratings, matchup specifics, who's overrated maybe because of strength of schedule or because they've won a bunch of close games. Finally, for me, you got to look at situation. And this is why I've arrived at Gonzaga, you know, 11.5, 12 tonight in the first half is what you can lay. Is I lean Gonzaga full game, Adam. But the reason why I like and bet the first half is I'm a little bit worried Gonzaga's motivation for margin in the second half when they have a huge game against BYU coming up on deck on Saturday. So that would be my concern there. But I do think they're razor focused as far as the first half because of that great record Santa Clara has. And that's pretty much it, walking through that handicap.
Well, and of course, too, I mean, you know, you might as well be focused in the first half with a team that just won on the road at St. Mary's coming to town. So for Mark Few, it's easy. You know, hey, look at what this team just did we can't take them lightly. So we blow them out in the first half and then put it on cruise control in the second half. So I think that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense there. One other quick thing. I had a listener point this out to me, and I saw our mutual friend Ralph Michaels tweet this out this morning. Houston Baptist, 12-2 to the over. Average line, 165.5 on the total. Average score in those games coming in at 184.2 points per game. So an average total of 165.5, and they're clearing that by almost 19 points per game. So that was something that Ralph Michaels mentioned, that something a couple of my listeners mentioned as well. Houston Baptist, 12-2 to the over here on this season.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the lines on those types of teams this year, more widely available than ever before. So another reason why it's okay to specialize with some of these smaller conferences. In the past, you can only find some of those lines in maybe 30% of the books. Now it's well over 50% of the books are going to carry some of those smaller teams this year. And I'll say this, don't be afraid. And maybe it seems a little bit square, but the market in college basketball is so much slower to adjust than college football or the NFL. So don't be afraid to ride a team like Houston Baptist over the total. It's going to take multiple games for the market to adjust. And in some instances, it can be 8, 9, 10, 12 games for it to adjust.
Well, you and I were worried about how long we'd go here coming into this segment, but I think it actually wound up being one of our best ones here of the season. Professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, real quick, football newsletter. Obviously, only three games left when it comes to football for this football season, but if you sign up now, you'll get this season and next season for $79. It is NFL and college, write-ups on every single NFL and college game, top picks of the week. 56% the last 5 years combined. That's not too shabby. You get five college football picks a week, three NFL. Check that out. That's at BradPowersSports.com. It's called the Powers Picks Newsletter. You can download past issues for free. And since we just got done talking college basketball, I don't have a weekly newsletter with college basketball because things change. Teams are playing multiple games in a week. What I do have is what I call a daily VIP email update where I send my picks of the day each and every day. That's $199 through the end of the season, $199 for college basketball VIP. And you can find all that and more at BradPowersSports.com.
And, of course, as always, make sure you follow Brad on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care, man.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, again, professional handicapper, over at BradPowersSports.com and at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll do a grab bag segment to open things up, talk about some plays I like for the weekend, give you some early thoughts on those Major League Baseball season win totals, which are now posted up out in Las Vegas and shortly coming to a book near you. I think PointsBet also has them out in New Jersey. So I'll talk about a lot of that different stuff in tomorrow's first segment. And then we'll also hear from Brent, the head risk manager down at DSI Sportsbook, for this week's version of the Odds Report. We'll wrap up the college football season and take a look at the sharp money that's out there for the two conference championship games. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.